Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS in Pasadena for a morning of multilingual readings, interactive performances, and lots of kid fun. It's Super Fun Saturday on June 1st. Get your tickets at las.com/events.
Things are bad on the Colorado River, and we all may have to cut back on water.
That will be bloody.
Listen to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker, wherever you get podcasts.
We're listening today to some essays from our series Race in LA that we launched this year with LAist. Among the contributors to this project have been some of our own colleagues, data editor Dana Am I Here, LAist digital news producer Brian Frank, columnist Eric Galindo, our own news apprentice Marina Pena, and ATC host and former Take-Two producer Austin Cross, who we're happy to have with us from his studio just down the hall. Hey, Austin.
Hey, Martinez.
All right, so you wrote three very powerful, revealing essays for the Race in LA series, and I want to talk about your first one. It's titled Black and Tired in This American Newsroom. What prompted you to write that one, and what were you feeling at the time?
Well, it was one of those times when the news became very personal for me. You know, my whole life I've struggled to understand the social construct that we call race. And admittedly, I started a lot later in life than a lot of people who look just like me. Now, for context, the first sentence of the piece is, "I didn't realize I was black until I was 11. And that not only frames the article, but I thought it was important to start there because it also frames how I would come to understand race in my life. Now, there's a reason for that. My father, who passed away 2 years ago this week, actually, was central to my understanding of my race. And he was from a very different generation than most parents of people my age. He grew up in the Jim Crow South in the 1940s and 50s. And so he worked really, really hard to shield me from the realities of what it really means to be black in America. So when I moved from West LA to the Inland Empire at age 11 and started experiencing aggressions, both large and small, it kind of shattered my worldview and put me on this unending journey of figuring out how me and people like me can make their way in a country that's sometimes hostile to our very presence here.
Yeah, the city, the country, certainly our newsroom here at KPCC was going through a lot of the same things, or kind of a reckoning process over race and how exactly we talk about it. What was going on, though, in your head at that time?
Well, some background. When I first came to work on this very show, Take Two, back in 2015 as a little cub producer, you might remember, the country was still working through a chapter that I now see as kind of the prologue to the racial movement this year. And I came on board hoping that I could give people the information that they need, corny as this sounds, brace yourselves, to make the world a more just place. You know, a lot of people come here trying to make the world better, I think. And I came armed with a lot of the lessons that I had learned since my so-called Great Awakening at age 11. And I thought that maybe if I could just help people understand this construct that we call race, the history, the struggle, and let people hear from black voices that they might not, you know, ordinarily meet in their lives, maybe it would save some lives. Because end of the day, Martinez, we live in a structure that devalues, disregards, and discards people who look just like me every day. That's hard to face. Yeah. So imagine going into work, hoping you're making a difference for years, and then May 2020, George Floyd. And I just remember sitting at home, this was during quarantine at this point, reading the same backwards thoughts on Twitter, and I was just thinking to myself, my God, nothing has changed. What was it all for? You know? So yeah. I took to Twitter, and my stream of consciousness tweets became the foundation for my first essay.
All right. Now that you've prepped us for it, let's hear that essay titled Black and Tired in This American Newsroom.
I didn't realize I was black until I was 11. I was a mixed kid. I grew up in Westwood. My dad wore a suit and tie every day. He worked as a volunteer mediator with the Los Angeles City Attorney's Office. That put us in contact with law enforcement and city officials on the highest level. Mayor Richard Reardon once taught me how to shake hands. When I bashfully told him that I hoped to run for president in 2024, he told me I had his vote. When Los Angeles housing costs threatened my father's dream of keeping his family in the safest neighborhood possible, we moved to the Inland Empire. I was in fifth grade. The culture shock was palpable. I hadn't even lived there a year when a classmate felt compelled to inform me that I don't act black. And then came what I now sardonically refer to as my cannot unsee period. My dad asked our neighbor's daughter to stop playing in our driveway. I vividly remember what happened next. Her mother told her, matter-of-factly, that she didn't need to listen to my father. We have more rights than them, she said as we listened. My world changed. In public spaces, I became hyper-aware of my blackness. Still, I thought I could assimilate. I bought into Rancho Cucamonga-style conservatism. It's a spoken and unspoken doctrine that sifted my people into two groups, black people and niggers. Yeah, that's verbatim, hard R. People told me that I was in the first group, that I was, quote, not like the others. I'm ashamed to admit it, but adolescent me started to believe it. The coming years would erode that notion. By my early 20s, all of my close friends who looked like me had experienced racism with law enforcement. At least three have looked down the barrel of a gun. I accepted these terrifying moments as a pseudo-rite of passage. My test came in the late thousands in Corvallis, Oregon, a small town that I found oddly like Andy Griffith's Mayberry. The fly in the milk glass vibes were strong. I was 21. I had rented bikes while visiting an ex and returned them to the shop. Within minutes of leaving, I noticed several police cars slowly patrolling the city's quaint streets. Hoping to make myself appear to be less of a threat, I smiled at the officers in a passing patrol car. I even gave myself a pep talk. They're not here for you. After a few tense moments, I sensed a squad car pulling up behind me. Hey, big guy. God damn it. Excuse me, sir? Okay, fine. Oh, hello, officer, I said, my voice instinctually raised a few octaves to mask my disappointment. We got word that someone saw you taking some bikes and rattling car doors, the officer said. In reality, I had removed bikes from the back of a truck and checked the lock. Clearly, I should have known better than to, you know, live life. I kept my receipt and showed it to the officer. That cleared things up quickly. What would have happened if I didn't have that receipt? I often wonder how the situation might have gone. George Floyd ended up dead over a report that he tried to pass a fake $20 bill. I'd hate to know what could happen over a few cheap bikes. The Corvallis encounter confirmed to me that I was not exempt from the plight of my people because I wore collared shirts and spoke well. The last vestiges of that belief were shattered that day. For so long, I wanted, needed, to think that there was something I could do to be safe in the world. There wasn't. There never was, really. I came to KPCC's Take Two show by way of CBS Radio in 2015. I took the lead on segments about race and policing. I'd bring on community organizers, tactical experts, historians, faith leaders, heck, even Martin Luther King Jr.'s speechwriter. I felt that I was living my purpose and bringing healing to the land. I covered unarmed killings. Etched in my mind are names like Walter Scott, Sandra Bland, and Philando Castile. After each incident, I diligently worked with a sense of purpose. Then came George Floyd. I think it broke me. There's so much work to be done, so many conversations to facilitate, and yet, in my heart, I feel what can only be described as hopelessness. Despair might be a close second. Anguish, a third. There's so much to be done, and yet I feel like I have little left in me. I actually think I believed I could change the world by amplifying the truth. Today, I realize now that my fight for justice and reconciliation, perhaps much like your fight, is but a small battle in a larger war over America's narrative. Victories are far and few. Progress is difficult to measure. And yet, I know that it is only by embracing the truth of how our society was designed that we will ever have the clarity to remake it. Widespread public angst isn't a quirk of the system. It's a result. God, it's so hard to tell your story, America. But I'll keep at it. My determined colleagues will keep at it. At a time when powers, both foreign and domestic, attempt to co-opt the narrative of this day, we will continue to polish the mirror and hold it to your face. Greek proverb teaches us that a society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in. And so today, I sit back down and do the most that anybody can do during this time. Try to create something that heals the world. Even if true change is something that I may never see.
Wow. Well, Austin, I mean, it's been 6 months since you wrote that. How are you feeling now?
You know, still tired, eh? But honestly, I'm feeling, dare I say, optimistic. You know, 6 months is not a lot of time, and it's hardly enough time to undo really hundreds of years of social conditioning and laws that disadvantage Black people, policing culture. But I'll also say, anecdotally, I'm hearing a lot more people talking about race and exploring the extent to which it touches almost every aspect of our lives. And I'm seeing a lot of people doing the so-called work that's necessary to help break down these invisible barriers. Now, I don't know where we're headed as a society, eh? And some days I feel more pessimistic than others. I'm sure a lot of people feel me on that. But I'll tell you this, though. I'm not a father right now, but I'm feeling a lot better about the idea of raising my future kids in the world that we've built since May of this year.
That's KPECC's Austin Cross. His LAist essay is titled Black and Tired in This American Newsroom. Austin, thanks a lot.
Thank you, eh?
All 7 states on the Colorado River may have to cut back water, but not everyone agrees on how. From Coloradans who blame others for the crisis.
There continues to be a look upstream to solve a problem that we did not create.
To farmers who may lose their livelihoods.
We don't want to cut equal with everybody else.
Will they reach a deal in time? Listen to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker, wherever you get podcasts.